Welcome to Securing America, with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. Folks, we are in the middle of a war. I think of it as World War III. It'll be called other things by various people. It will be perhaps understood properly as now a global war. One that is going to be, I think, unfortunately, unfolding in still more theaters. But since we were last with you, we have had a chance to take stock of what has been going on in Israel, where a new front has been opened in this war with the invasion by the Jewish state of Hamas and the mayhem that has been precipitated by the terrorists against innocent Israelis, as well as the retribution that is now being wrought by Israel for that horror. This is a good time to talk to a man we value enormously for his expertise, both in this particular region and more broadly, notably as an undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency for some 20 years. He's also served in the uniform of the United States Army. He's been an assistant attorney general out in Washington State. He is an author, among other things, of the Beyond Repair, The Decline and Fall of the CIA. He is these days the driving force behind an invaluable online resource and magazine.com at Substack. His name, of course, is Charles Sam Faddis. He's one of our regulars, and we always appreciate the chance to visit with him, especially at a time such as this. Sam, it's great to have you back, sir. Welcome.
It is great to be here. I wish we were not here at such a difficult and somber time.
Me too. But because it is a difficult and somber time, it makes all the more important the conversation that we look forward to having with you today. Sam, you've seen a lot of horrible things in your life, not a little of it at the hands of jihadis, people who are subscribers to Sharia and its doctrine that Islam must rule the world and jihad is the way to bring it about, preferably violently, if possible, because it's the most decisive way to subjugate people. I guess I'd like to start by just asking for your thoughts as we reflect on what has happened at the hands, I think, principally of jihadists from Hamas and other terrorist organizations out of the Gaza Strip, perhaps some secular terrorists as well. But what are the insights that you think we must take away from what has transpired on Saturday and in the days since?
Well, Frank, I think there are a couple of things that come sort of front of mind here, right? First is, when you're talking about jihadists, whether we're talking about Shia or Sunni or whatever stripe, we're talking about barbarians. Okay, this is, I mean, let's just dispense with any pretense of freedom fighters or so forth. I mean, if you've paid attention to what's coming out of Israel, this is the sixth century, right? This is rape, torture, desecration of the dead. I mean, there's no moral equivalency here. These are barbarians. They are vicious. There is no limit to the violence. And I've seen that firsthand, and I've dealt with them face to face. The other thing that I guess, because there's apparently, at least in this administration's mind, some controversy about this, could put that in air quotes. Hamas is a creature of Iran. They are funded by Iran, equipped by Iran, trained by Iran. They don't every once in a while stop by and talk to the Iranians. They are lashed up with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps at the hip all day, every day. So, I mean, we can talk details of who has said what, but the bottom line is, an attack of this scope by Hamas is an attack by the Iranian regime on Israel. So, and I kind of think that everybody on the planet understands that, except apparently Tony Blinken, who remains confused and unsure that the Iranians had a hand in this. Now, the Iranians are attempting to exterminate the Israelis. It's not really so much a terrorist attack as a full-scale invasion. And again, there's no moral equivalency here. So I have on many occasions criticized the Israelis for any variety of policy issues, but you know, that's irrelevant at this point, right? There really are good guys and bad guys in this fight.
Good versus evil, spiritual warfare. And this brings me to a really important question for you, Sam. Barbarism of the kind that we've seen on display in these videos that were taken apparently by people who were so-called journalists in the Palestinian camp, embedded with the terrorists for the purposes of chronicling the carnage, the desecrations, the rapes, the murders, and the rest of it. Sam, in your experience, what does it mean that in addition to having such, inhumane characteristics, to say the least, that people feel divinely mandated to engage in such barbarism? Talk a little bit, again, from your personal experience about, the zeal, for one thing, but I guess also the fact that they're not likely to be talked out of it.
No, you're not. I mean, around the margins are there individuals, in my experience, who sort of come to their senses. Yeah, I've recruited guys inside groups like Al-Qaeda, and ultimately who had come to realize, okay, wait, I was committed to this cause, and now I realize I'm knee-deep in blood and human suffering, and I don't really anymore think God told me to do this. In fact, one guy who comes to mind, to whom I said at one point, look, these are not men who are following the commandments of any God. These are men who have decided they can play God themselves. But for the most part, no, you're talking about absolute commitment. They believe that the end times are here, their own version of Armageddon, the apocalypse. And you have to understand that dying in the performance of jihad guarantees you entry to paradise. It's not that they're willing to die. They want to die. Dying in the performance of this guarantees you admission. And I would add that for many of these young men, that paradise is not some... The presence of 77 virgins is not theoretical or an allegory or a metaphor. They literally believe that they're going to blow themselves up, and the next moment is the never-ending orgy. And I won't get any more graphic than that, but that's the level of mindset you're dealing with many of these guys. Again, they can justify anything. You are pure evil. They're on the right side of everything. It's not a political thing. It is really a 6th century view of religion, right? You can torture, rape, slaughter, and at the end of the day, you're doing the right thing. So no, you can't talk to, by and large, you can't talk to these folks, right? You can't discuss things with them.
We're going to take a short break on that point. Sam Faddis is with us. We're going to be exploring still further what the proximate reasons for engaging in this kind of bloodletting were, as well as what comes next. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Joe Biden reiterated American solidarity with Israel and sought to deter Iran, another of its terrorist proxies, Hezbollah, and others, from interfering with Israel's retaliation for Saturday's murderous invasion by Hamas. Unfortunately, Biden's credibility is sorely lacking, as his administration had actively contributed to conditions that prompted that horrific attack. It relentlessly conveyed hostility towards the Israeli government, was complicit in leftist congressional efforts to deny the Jewish state resupplies of vital anti-missile weaponry, undermined Israel's existing peace agreements with regional regimes, and interfered with the conclusion of one with Saudi Arabia. Worse yet, it resumed taxpayer funding of Hamas and other Palestinian terrorists, allowed over $30 billion to flow to Iran, and turned a blind eye to Chinese destabilizing of the region. To truly stand with Israel, Joe Biden must stop standing with her enemies and ours. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. Sam Faddis is in the house virtually. We're very pleased to have him always, but especially at a time such as this, when we're witnessing carnage on a scale that, well, it boggles the mind. In a population the size of Israel's, if it's sort of compared to one of our size, approximately 40,000 Americans would have perished if subjected to this kind of an attack. This is staggering, to say the least, and understandably has given rise to a determination, I think it's fair to say, on the part of Israelis across the political spectrum now, that not just revenge needs to be exacted, a price needs to be paid for what's been done, but also that the terrorists who perpetrated this have to be put out of business once and for all. We were talking, Sam, before the break about the evil that is animating this kind of barbarism. And I did want to just make the point that when we talk about Islamic teachings and the code of Sharia, which compels faithful adherents to it to engage in jihad for the purposes of establishing Allah's supremacy the world over. Fortunately, a great many Muslims, particularly I think in this country, don't subscribe to that. Don't practice their faith in accordance with it, don't think that they should. Unfortunately, well, that's the good news. The bad news is the authorities of the faith are pretty clear that Sharia is the way, and it is what is mandatory, compulsory, obligatory for those who consider themselves and want to be considered as faithful Muslims. And that creates an environment in which, unfortunately, nothing but decisive power brought to bear against them will prevent more of this. Would you agree?
Yeah, obviously, I agree fully. And you and I have discussed this before. Look, I've run operations all across the Middle East. A lot of guys died in those operations on our side. And the vast majority of those individuals who died on our side fighting jihadists were themselves Muslims who were fighting to, in their view, save their faith from these guys who want to hijack it and drag it back into the sixth century. So without question, I think that's important to say.
Yeah. Well, whether it's hijacking it or whether it's simply faithfully exercising it, I guess, is a matter of perception, but it does seem to me it's important to be grounded in the truth,
right,
that they're not off on a toot, these guys, whether it's ISIS, as you've dealt with, or Al-Qaeda, or Hamas, or Hezbollah, or the mullahs of Iran themselves. And Sam, just a quick further thought on this. As I think you sort of intimated a moment ago, the Biden administration not only doesn't seem to clearly get this, but seems still to be countenancing, if not actively basing its policies on the idea that the Shia of Iran can't really be collaborating murderously with the Sunni of Hamas or other parts of the Arab world. Again, you've been up close and personal with all of this. Is that anything other than, you know, disinformation on the part of the jihadis?
No, look, my comment earlier about Blinken being confused was obviously sarcastic. Blinken's not confused, nor is the administration confused. They're just once again lying to us and expecting us to buy. I think I've said this to you before, Frank. I don't really mind people lying to me. That kind of goes with my trade that I've practiced for many years. When I get upset is when people tell me stupid lies. I feel like they need to spend at least enough time to come up with a credible lie. Because now you're not only lying to me, but insulting my intelligence. I mean, this is, everybody on the planet knows that Iran and Hamas are in effect the same thing. I mean, Hamas is one of multiple entities like Hezbollah, and there's a whole bunch of them all across Iraq that are creatures of the Iranians. They're not running around on their own, and they're not staging an attack like this without Iranian support and foreknowledge. And let's take it a step further. It's not just that the administration is covering for this now. This is happening because of this administration, whose they are closer to the Iranians. This is part and parcel of their ideology. We're the bad guys. The Israelis are the bad guys. And I mean, in the view of the Biden administration, we're the horrible white supremacist, I don't know, patriarchal, you know, we're the evil ones. These guys are the good guys. Joe just gave these folks, the Iranians, $6 billion. Mali, who has been his special envoy to Iran, running around in the shadows, talking to the Iranians ever since the inception of the Biden administration, with, we're never told clearly exactly what he's doing. The guy who is now suspended, had his security clearance pulled, because it appears he was passing classified information to the Iranians. That's our guy, it appears, handing secret information to the Iranians. Well, his background, he loves Hamas. This is the guy Joe appointed to deal with the Iranians, as his point man with the Iranians, has said glowing things about Hamas in the past, how we need to admire them. Guys that rape women, desecrate corpses, behead people. This guy loves them. So,
well, and as I recall, Sam, he actually was so radioactive at a moment in the Obama-Biden 1.0 administration, as I recall, because of his enthusiasm for Hamas and his belief that we really needed to be engaging with them, that even the Obama-Biden team thought that they needed to put him out to pasture for a time. But, of course, he was brought back, and then he was brought back in this administration. But I want to ask you, Sam, about one other facet of what he's been up to that is very alarming. There's something that's been described as the Iran Experts Initiative, involving, among other things, a woman by the name of Ariane Tabatabai. I'm a little unclear whether she is still the chief of staff of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low Intensity Conflict. Mm-hmm. That would be a rather sensitive position, I think you'd agree. But whether she is at the moment or not is kind of irrelevant to the point. How did she get the job? And who is she, it seems, working for?
All really valid questions, right? I mean, this experts group, so-called, that you're talking about, I guess you could call it an Iranian lobbying firm, but that term lobbying, I think, is too mild. I mean, this is an outfit that is working for the Ayatollahs and attempting to steer American policy in favor of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I also am unclear as to where she, whether she actually ever left that group, but certainly based on previous involvement in that, not only shouldn't she have a position at this level in DOD, one would think she couldn't get a security clearance of any kind to work for the U.S. government.
You'd think, wouldn't you? Sam, hold that particular thought, because Mally's security clearance has been pulled. Hers evidently was processed without any problem. We've got to talk about what's going on with respect to, once again, our counterintelligence operations. That more with Sam Faddis. Stay tuned.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and we are going to have yet another segment, I'm very pleased to say, with Sam Faddis, one of our duty experts on, well, among other things, the world of hurt we're in, based on, in part, the insights drawn from his long experience working for our government, notably as an undercover operative for the Central Intelligence Agency. And Sam, you know, the idea that we would have somebody who apparently has very, very troubling ties to the Iranian regime, serving in a very senior position in the United States government, whether it's Rob Mally, for one thing, or people like this gal, Arian Tabatabai, who he reportedly got employed by the government in a senior position, I think, both in the State Department, sensitive position, let me say, in both the State Department and the Defense Department. It just speaks to a point that I know you have made in the past with me, but it really comes to the fore in this circumstance. Where is American counterintelligence in rooting out and shutting down these kinds of operations?
Nowhere to be seen, right? I mean, you referenced Mally in contact with Hamas. Mally, when he was working with Obama, was meeting face-to-face with Hamas. Hamas is an ultra-violent terrorist group and so designated by the United States. He was having face-to-face meetings with them. When they pulled him from the Obama administration, I mean, the Obama campaign, I think it was at that point, my understanding is he continued to have the meetings, but now in an unofficial capacity. So this was sleight of hand. Tabatabai worked for, very recently, the radical Islamic regime that is trying to get a nuclear weapon and is now setting Israel on fire. Again, she shouldn't be able to have a clearance to work on the loading dock anywhere, and yet somehow she's a senior official in DOD. And then more remarkably, when that dusted up in the press and everybody on the planet was talking about it, nobody did anything. She still has a clearance. As far as I know, she still goes to work every day. I mean, American counterintelligence at best is asleep at the wheel. Now, you could infer potentially worse than that, which is, as we've seen with the Biden investigation, that they're actively covering these things up. Whatever it is, it's a disaster.
And pursuing so-called domestic extremists who clearly are just patriotic Americans. Sam, all of this is very troubling, needless to say. One other thing about the impetus behind Iran pulling the trigger on the Hamas option, and it may yet be pulling it on the Hezbollah option as well, which promises to be just an unbelievable, genocidal, missile-delivered assault on Israel. Was the determination of the Iranian regime to preclude Saudi Arabia, its mortal enemy, although the Chinese brokered an informal modus vivendi between them, apparently, from becoming, if not, completely aligned with the Israelis, at least to have some sort of agreement established between them, peace or otherwise. What are your thoughts on both what the Iranians were concerned about there and why this, in fact, should be pursued even more aggressively, if possible, this deal with the Israelis and the Saudis?
Well, I think it's entirely possible that at least part of the calculus on the part of the Iranians was to blow up these accords and derail this and so forth. I'm not convinced at this point that they don't have a broader agenda. I mean, when you have an American administration that sides openly with the Ayatollahs, that's kind of a golden opportunity. Hezbollah is saying they will jump in the war if Israel goes into Gaza. Well, Israel's going into Gaza. That's that guarantee that's happening. They're not just going to shell it. They're going in. Other Iranian creations, other Shia militia have said the same thing. So we're not necessarily looking at sort of the aftermath of an event so much as we are looking at the wind up to a much broader conflict. But what your comments really highlight the disaster that has occurred since Joe sat down in the White House. I mean, not that there aren't multiple such disasters. I mean, when Trump left the White House, we had the Abraham Accords. We were putting to bed decades of war in the Middle East, the Israelis and the Saudis, everybody sort of coming together. Now we're looking at the possibility of a full-scale Mideast war and the place going up in flames. That's how much distance we have covered in the wrong direction under this guy.
Under policies of this administration, yes. No question about it. Sam, I mentioned a moment ago China. It's, of course, now very much engaged with the Iranians. Mm-hmm. Is there any doubt in your mind that the Chinese are engaged at the directive level with respect to decisions involving a Middle East front in what I think increasingly is shaping up to be World War III?
No, not really. And look, we've talked about this many times. You know, for those playing at home, make your list: policy decisions with national security implications by the Biden administration. Which ones benefit us? Which ones benefit the Chinese Communist Party? If you can find a single one, anything, I say since this guy's been in office, we know we're not really talking about Joe, but this administration, every decision has benefited Beijing. And this, who's benefiting right now? By the way, we should add, I mean, we're now talking about sending arms to Israel. Okay, you and I have talked about before. We have largely emptied the warehouses of prepositioned arms and equipment in Israel that we stockpiled there for exactly this kind of crisis, because we've sent it off to Ukraine and not replenished it. So, I mean, all of these chickens are coming home to roost now.
Sam, the other place we've done that is South Korea.
Yep.
And Mike, bet is that when the Chinese decide to go for it in the Western Pacific, and where exactly they're going to go for it is to be determined, but Taiwan is obviously a possibility. The Philippines may be. Mm-hmm. Japan. Our base is there at the very least, Guam, maybe Honolulu, maybe the United States proper. One of the places that they're likely to, I think, add to the list of fronts in this war will probably be the Korean Peninsula, and getting their friend Kim Jong-un to create another distraction, another thing that taxes our resources and distracts us, specifically our intelligence capabilities, such as they are. That seems to me to be another play in this go game that they seem to be pursuing. Your thoughts?
I think all of those are entirely possible. And if all of that is happening simultaneously next week and you've been paying attention, will you really be surprised? No. Let's throw into the mix the border. The number of fighting age males that have come across the border, Chinese, but also Middle Eastern. I'm not suggesting that every guy that came across the border is a terrorist. But the point is, when you allow millions of people to come in, there is no effective screening. Anybody who thinks they're checking against some magic list who's coming in the country, you're delusional. There is no such magic list. So we're just allowing the whole world to come in here. That is an open invitation, not just to the Chinese, but to Al-Qaeda, ISIS, everybody else. I wrote something the other day saying, how long is it till Gaza happens here? Until you find you have teams in 12 major cities and people are being gunned down on the streets of Chicago, New York, every place. Bombs are going off. There is nothing this administration is doing to prevent that. If it doesn't happen, it's pure dumb luck.
Yeah, and I'm not feeling so lucky at the moment, nor should any of us, I think. But Sam, to this point, there's a lot of talk now about sealing the border, and I'm all for that. But clearly, we're going to have to do something about these millions of people who have come in. And again, not all of them are jihadists or Chinese special operators or terrorists of other stripes, but some substantial number assuredly are. I've heard, you know, at least 10,000 of those People's Liberation Army special operator types. And I have the feeling that that's quite conservative. But what would you recommend we do now about the fact that while the barn door's been open, a lot of bad folks have come in?
I think we all know that the unfortunate reality is you're going to have massive deportations of people. And that's going to be logistically a nightmare and painful on many levels. But you cannot just say, we allowed millions of people in here. We have no idea, no earthly idea who they are. There is no such thing as a background check on them. We cannot allow them to remain. And again, that's horrifying, but that's where we're ending up.
But a further challenge is that we don't necessarily know where they are either.
We have no idea where they are. We don't monitor them.
Yeah. So roundups of people based on their ethnicity or their skin color or their religion sounds to be a real witch's brew. So even if they don't carry out the Gaza-style attacks here, it is going to roil this country in ways that are absolutely predictable. And again, as you say, destructive of this country and helpful to its mortal enemy, especially the Chinese Communist Party. Sam Faddis, we have to let you go. Thank you for the great work you do at nmagazine.com. And of course, for visiting with us here. We'll look forward to our next visit soon. Stay tuned for more with Bill Walton right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Joe Biden reiterated American solidarity with Israel and sought to deter Iran, another of its terrorist proxies, Hezbollah, and others, from interfering with Israel's retaliation for Saturday's murderous invasion by Hamas. Unfortunately, Biden's credibility is sorely lacking, as his administration had actively contributed to conditions that prompted that horrific attack. It relentlessly conveyed hostility towards the Israeli government, was complicit in leftist congressional efforts to deny the Jewish state resupplies of vital anti-missile weaponry, undermined Israel's existing peace agreements with regional regimes, and interfered with the conclusion of one with Saudi Arabia. Worse yet, it resumed taxpayer funding of Hamas and other Palestinian terrorists, allowed over $30 billion to flow to Iran, and turned a blind eye to Chinese destabilizing of the region. To truly stand with Israel, Joe Biden must stop standing with her enemies and ours. This is Frank Affney.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we are joined by one of our other favorite regulars. His name is Bill Walton. He is these days the proprietor of and the host and driving force behind a marvelous television podcast. It is called The Bill Walton Show, but he brings to it a wealth of experience that makes it not only very, very compelling television and a great source of information, but also I think required viewing. And Bill's experience includes that of, as I'm fond of saying, a recovering master of the universe on Wall Street, where he ran a $6 billion company called Allied Capital. He has also been the president of the Council for National Policy, a preeminent organization which I'm proud to be a member, representing conservative interests and values and priorities. And Bill, you are, for all these reasons, a great guy to visit with about this civilizational conflict that is upon us. It seems now, clearly, as we talked about with Sam Faddis a moment ago, a real clash of good and evil. And when one talks about good, we're not saying that anyone is perfect. We're certainly not. But it couldn't be more clear, could it, as to which side we want to be on in this particular clash?
Well, the thing to realize, to remember about Israel, is that Israel started out with on a strip of sand in 1949 as an independent state. And since then, Israel's become not only the most important, maybe the only liberal democracy in that part of the world, bastion of our part of our Judeo-Christian values, but also Israel now is the innovation and entrepreneurship that the country's shown, and the individuals have now, those of us in the venture community, call it startup nation, and it's just 50% of its exports are tech exports. And so we talk about clash of civilizations. On the one hand, you look at what Israel has done, starting with nothing, and then you turn your attention to the Gaza Strip, which has been controlled by Hamas, I think, what, since 2005, and they've got it's the most densely populated piece of dirt on Earth with 2 million people in it, and they've done absolutely nothing with it to create a strong economy or a vibrant society. Of the 2 million people, the average age is about 25 years old, so it's one of the youngest countries on the planet. And of those young people, roughly 75% are unemployed. So they've done nothing to create opportunities for young people and growth in the society. So in terms of the clash of civilizations, it's clear where we need to stand on this. They've had plenty of opportunities, almost 20 years, to build something in Gaza. Hasn't happened.
So I can just hear people responding, Bill, by saying, well, this is entirely Israel's fault. It was surrounded and essentially cut off from the world and terribly oppressed.
As I recollect, Frank, Israel in 1949 was surrounded and cut off from the world. And
big time. With people actually set on destroying it. Yeah, but Bill, let me just ask you, the argument that we kicked around a little bit with Sam Faddis is that this is a lot less about the dissatisfaction and frustrations and anger of right. Palestinians in Gaza than it is about an agenda on the part of jihadists, whether they're in Tehran or whether they're in the Gaza Strip or any place else for that matter, to pursue the destruction of, well, the Judeo-Christian civilization, as you sort of described it a moment ago, with Israel as the part of it that's closest at hand. And they've demonstrated both their intent and I think what is clearly the agenda of the Iranian mullahs now, whether they do it directly themselves and with nuclear weapons, perhaps, or whether they do it through these kinds of proxies like Hamas and maybe Hezbollah next. Your thoughts?
Well, we know that Hamas is a proxy for Iran, and increasingly Iran is a proxy for China. And they've had lots of dealings extensively in the last decade, and it's growing. And so, yeah, certainly this is not just about some unemployed kids in Gaza that are acting up. This is part of a global strategy to eradicate the Judeo-Christian civilization, and in particular Israel, as a place to start. And the thing we need to be mindful of is that, and you mentioned my background in finance. The Biden administration is also aiding and abetting this in the most egregious way. This $6 billion, which they say didn't go to this, it was allocated for humanitarian purposes. Well, really, come on. I mean, anybody, if you've got a money market account and a checking account, your the money in the bank has gone up a lot, and you can use one for the other with no problem. And that's exactly what Iran's done here.
And fungibility, as they say.
Excuse me?
Fungibility.
Fungibility, yes. Right. And so we're, and then we've got the Biden administration courting reestablishing strong relations with Iran. And of course, Iran has their nuclear program, and the only other nuclear program in the area is Israel. So there's all this at stake. And, you hear reporting here in the U.S. where I think anybody who starts saying that uses the term both sides, it's really a dog whistle. It means we support Hamas and we're against Israel. And so this both sides, which we seem to be getting from every major media outlet, is again something that's extremely disheartening. And I think, as Sam Faddis pointed out in your earlier segment, China is very much in the mix here.
Yeah. We have to take a short break, Bill, and I want to come to that next. But just on this larger point, this idea of moral equivalence between the good and the evil is reprehensible in the extreme. And it's going to get people killed, not just in Israel, I'm afraid, but here as well. We'll be right back with more with Bill Walton. Stay tuned. Welcome back. We're taking stock of the situation most immediately of this war that is now broken out in the Middle East, following on the war that has broken out in Eastern Europe. And quite possibly a prelude to war breaking out in the Western Pacific and maybe beyond. And Bill, we were just at the point of introducing another player in all of this. We've got Hamas, of course, we've got Hezbollah, we've got the Iranian regime that runs both and certainly was implicated deeply in this invasion of Israel. But behind them all, there's China, which has now developed a close relationship with the mullahs in Tehran and seems to be set on not just encouraging these fronts, but quite possibly opening up still more, including through the use of its own military forces in the Western Pacific. Talk a little bit about your assessment of China's role in all of this.
Well, as China looks at the global chessboard, they have to be delighted with what's happened in Israel and the Gaza Strip. The image I have is of one of our aircraft carriers steaming through the Mediterranean to come to the aid of Israel, or at least to stand offshore. And the way Xi would look at that, President Xi of China, would be, well, that's one less aircraft carrier we would need to deal with in the South China Sea if they do have intentions on Taiwan. And the other thing is that we've seen with the $150 billion of money we shipped to Ukraine, which was turned into weapons in some cases, but it looks like some of those weapons have made their way back through the black market to Gaza and helped finance, if not provided the weapons for the attack on Israel. They're watching all these developments and seeing that our ability to pay attention to Taiwan grows less and less. And the calculation, though, is, you know, as we've talked about before, the Chinese economy is on the ropes. The real estate sector has collapsed, residential real estate in particular, and their exports are down. They're actually charted to grow 3-5% a year. And what do totalitarian leaders do when things are tough at home and people are grumbling? Well, they tend to find a war to fight. And what better target would there be than Taiwan?
Yeah. Bill, on that point, you know, you mentioned the demographic situation in Gaza, a country that's got a median age that is now sizably comprised of military-aged men for whom there's no work, or women. Is another impetus, it seems, for lashing out, finding ways to employ them as cannon fodder rather than have them festering at home. Right. So all of that suggests that we may well be, you know, watching a ratcheting up that will result in attacks. I mentioned with Sam Faddis in the earlier block the possibility that it begins with yet another distracting a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. It's entirely possible that we could see Pakistan induced to engage with India at the same time, or perhaps even in our own so-called backyard. I think it was really our front yard. The Chinese presence in Latin America is the stuff of which a lot of mischief can be made. So when you look at this, you mentioned chess. I called it a game of Go, which is the Chinese preferred and arguably even more challenging multi-level, multi-layer game of strategy. These all seem to be aligning in a direction that is going to make the conflict Xi is clearly preparing for inevitable.
Well, since Biden's come in and brought in all his able lieutenants like Anthony Blinken, who has just proven himself increasingly to be, each day he seems more and more naive and much more filled, you know, much more overtly lying about things than he even did even 6 months ago.
I detect a scintilla of cynicism in that comment about his brilliant lieutenant.
It's that Wall Street. That Wall Street part.
Yeah, there you go again.
I'm not buying his act. Anyway, so you mentioned all these places, and I'm sure it was an oversight. You forgot to mention our own border, and you also mentioned all those young people in Gaza, and some of those people, I think, have found their way to the U.S. as part of the influx of immigrants from all over the world, including China. And you have to believe that Hamas has been working that channel effectively. And I think the thing we really need to worry about now is how much of that has come into the United States and how much of that is orchestrated in part by China. I think we've seen that the Islamic fascist and the Chinese can make common cause quite easily. So we're
even though it just has to be said, even though the Chinese are genocidally repressing a Muslim population as we speak. I mean, it's evidence of the cynicism of this idea of the Ummah, the great, unified Muslim world. Not so much.
Did you hear that profuse declaration of disgust from the China about the terrorism in Israel? They were silent. And, you know, as we know, they're one of the largest perpetrators of internal terrorism on their own people. So
they sure are. We talk about that at some length, as you know. I can't resist the temptation to point it out in our book, The Indictment, the first charge of which, Bill, is the crimes against humanity in which the Chinese Communist Party is engaged against principally its own people. And the point that I think is just urgently needed here is that any country that treats its own folks that way is not going to treat ours any better. Bill, we are out of time, alas. It flies by when we're having fun.
We need to talk about moral relevancy next time, Frank.
Relativism, I think you mean.
Yes. Because we're dealing with that here in the United States, and our inability to condemn Hamas is...
We have to let you go, Bill. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get into much more on our next visit. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless all of you. I hope that you will join us next time. Until then, that you will go forth and multiply.